The Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson Smith.
It's a big pitch right here. Big pitch. Got it. He freezes Gardner and he didn't like it.
He has faced Rodriguez 24 times. So these two know each other.
Rodriguez strikes out for the third time. This time of the year, it doesn't make any difference who gets the job done.
No, just get the job done if you're the Blue Jays.
He got it! The biggest inning of Brett Cecil's career.
It's at the Letters for Wednesday, November 23rd on Sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. My name is Arden Zwelling. I'm joined as always by my co-host, Ben Nicholson. Ben, what's going on, man?
I think this is the calm before the storm.
Oh?
Yeah, for the baseball offseason.
Oh, in baseball or in life?
Well, hopefully not in life.
You know what? The clock's ticking on, I think it's January 10th that there's a new president.
Yeah. Well, I guess so, you could apply that more broadly too. But I was thinking in terms of... Yeah, in terms of the baseball offseason, calm before the storm, because in the next few days, I think it'll be pretty quiet. American Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it's generally a very quiet week, this one.
Yeah.
Yes.
And after that, I think it'll pick up. I think that we're going to start to see, I mean, the CBA thing, I mean, they're probably going to have to sort that out. But once the CBA is finalized, and I think that'll happen in short order, and once American Thanksgiving is over with, I think we'll see a lot of movement.
Safe to say, you have no doubt that their, you know, labor harmony will continue in Major League Baseball.
Right. Yeah. I have no doubt. I think that it's completely expected that there would be a few, I don't know if you want to call it scare tactics, or few people out there trying to get one last concession maybe, and trying to push the notion that a lockout is possible. I understand if you're an owner why you might want to do that, but I think at the same time, every indication from people who follow this stuff is that, hey, there's a lot working in this industry and a lot of reason to expect a deal to get done.
Everybody's getting rich. That's the thing. Everybody's getting rich. So there's really no reason for everybody to not continue getting rich. These two sides have been talking to each other extensively for months now. So for somebody, for whichever side it was, to go out and kind of leak some stuff to Ken Rosenthal or whatever.
I think we know which side it was.
I'm not making any presumptions. It makes sense. And especially at kind of the 11th hour, or maybe this is like the 10th hour, I guess, because it's December 1st is kind of the deadline. But it adds up. I expect them to get a deal done.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what that deal looks like.
Right.
Are we going to have a 26th man on rosters? Is there going to be an international draft? Is there going to be a qualifying offer system at all? Or will there just be true unrestricted free agency? It's going to be super interesting.
Yeah, and it would be interesting too. I mean, if they end up, say, removing the qualifying offer, this could be the final offseason where guys like Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion are actually linked to that. It could become, you know, could fall by the wayside the way that the old type A, type B free agency did. And, you know, I think that it's always an interesting offseason when you're in the first one of a new agreement, because you kind of have some of the old stuff and then you have the new stuff coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting to see what some of the, you know, negotiating, some of the concessions have been. Like if you're trading, you'd say, all right, we'll wipe out the qualifying offer system, but we want an international draft. It's like, well, hang on a second. Like the qualifying offer system, you know, affected 10 guys this year, 12 guys this year. The international draft, we're talking like a massive, massive undertaking. That's going to affect like, I don't know, half the players in the MLB almost, you know?
So, right.
That's a totally different thing.
It is. And I guess it's interesting because those guys aren't union members. So it's kind of a weird trade-off, right? It's like 10 guys who are really prominent union members because they're getting $17 million. That you're a top player at that point, versus all kinds of guys who aren't in the union. So it's a weird trade-off. It's hard to establish, you know, is one worth the other unless you're inside at the table in those talks.
It's a good point. The high tide raises all boats. So, you know,
sure.
if the richest players are getting richer and richer, then the players beneath them are just going to get richer as well.
100%.
Everybody's getting rich. That's the moral of the CBA story, is that everybody has a lot of money in baseball and you probably do not. You know what you also don't have if you're a Toronto Blue Jays fan? You don't have Brett Cecil. He's gone.
Yeah.
He's gone. 4 years, $30.5 million from the St. Louis Cardinals and a full no trade.
Yeah. I thought I was being aggressive by predicting that Cease will get a 3 year deal.
Right.
And turns out he gets four and more than $30 million guaranteed. So, I mean, this is a great deal for Brett Cecil. I mean, there's no question about that. The Cardinals get a really good pitcher. I think Cecil will help them. But, you know, I think that a lot of people that I spoke to were surprised that Brett Cecil got this much money. And it's a sign that relief pitching is not going to be cheap this offseason. And that's something the Blue Jays are going to have to face head on.
It's a bit of a market changer in a way. Like, and we've seen over the last couple of years, seventh and eighth inning guys have started to get paid a bit. Like you saw Darren O'Day got pretty much the same deal Brett Cecil did, but he was younger. And you saw Tony Sipp getting paid. And now is this Brett Cecil contract for a guy who, you know, I guess he like, is this, does this kind of change things for the relief market?
You know, I think that you almost answered it with bringing up O'Day. Yeah. I think that this fits in with O'Day, a really good setup man, really good setup reliever. And so I don't know that this is necessarily a huge game changer. I think that if someone like a Jerry Blevins or a Mike Dunn ends up getting over $30 million as well, then maybe we reevaluate and say, wow, in fact, that was a game changer. But I think those guys are probably more in the 2-3 year range and something more along the Tony Sipp, like $18 million range. And that's where the Blue Jays are going to have to be shopping if they want to get any kind of established left-hander reliever, which I think we'd probably both agree they need.
That's scary, man. Because like when I think about building a bullpen, like you can, there's a lot of ways to skin that cat. And you don't, you know, I've always been kind of against paying a lot of money for relievers because I think it can go pretty poorly because relievers are so volatile. And they are, you know, we had Eno Saris on and he called it like the small sample of small samples is relief pitching, you know? So it's such a high wire act with relievers. And when you can take, you know, people forget Brett Cecil is a converted starter. When you can take, you know, starters that don't work out, Andrew Miller, another great example, you know, if starters that don't work out and convert them into relievers and get value that way, when you can find a Jason Grilley and a Joaquin Benoit on the scrap heap in the middle of the season, you know, when you can have, you know, guys like, you know, you look at the contributions Aaron Sanchez made to the bullpen before he started, when you can kind of manage your young players that way and introduce them to the big leagues through the bullpen, I am reticent to spend a lot of money on relief pitching, but maybe that's where the market's going.
Yeah, I think that if you want to add any kind of experienced reliever, then you do have to spend. And I guess that's the question the Jays face right now, because they could go in and hope that they can replicate last year's success where they end up getting Joe Biagini, they adjust on the fly, they get Joaquin Benoit who gives them 23 innings of, did he have a zero ERA or was it 0.47 or something?
I get a zero ERA, and Joe Biagini is another great example of rule five guy who ended up being a huge contributor in your bullpen, cost you nothing.
Yeah, and I think that that's a sign of, that's how you can do it. It doesn't mean that you can do it every year though. Just because you did it once doesn't mean that you can do it every year. So if you're the Jays, do you end up spending in that section of the market, or do you try and find the next converted starter like a Joe Blanton who can go out there? Do you try to find the next Andrew Miller somewhere? I mean, it's a risky thing because not every failed starter becomes Wade Davis or Andrew Miller, but it's got to be tempting too, especially when you see those prices go up.
Absolutely. And so you know, if you've got, and you know, Drew Hutchison became Francisco Liriano in two prospects, which is something that the Blue Jays had to do, is a great deal. But if the Blue Jays hadn't been able to make that deal, I wonder if you look at a guy like Drew Hutchison, it's like, look, it's not working out for you as a starter. You know, Brandon Morrow is another guy who kind of fit into that mold. Like, look, you've had how many seasons now to try to make it as a starter? It hasn't worked. Go to the bullpen. Your stuff plays up. You're throwing harder. You know what I mean? You're not trying to turn over an order and go through multiple times. You can have success. And Brett Cecil is kind of in a way, a success story. And, you know, by the fact that he tried to be a starter for a really long time. He was a high draft pick. You know, he was a first rounder and a highly touted prospect and, you know, kind of went through the minors quickly, didn't work out as a starter, reinvented himself as a reliever, and got paid.
Yeah, and I think that if you're Brett Cecil, you got to be thrilled when you look at the amount of money that he got. He's going to a contending team, great baseball market. I mean, that's a really great spot for a pitcher to land. If you're the Blue Jays looking back at that draft pick, is that a successful draft pick in your view?
I think so. If you can take, and I think you went 38th overall, if you can take a 38th overall pick and turn him into like a lights out left-handed reliever for 4 years, basically, I guess, that he was really I don't know if you want to call his past year really, really good, but the second, the back half of it, certainly. So 3.5 years, basically, of like a great bullpen piece. You got that out of a first round pick. I think, like, sometimes I think fan expectations of prospects get a little bit out of whack where they think every prospect's going to be a superstar. That, I think, is a success story.
Yeah.
Brett Cecil.
I agree. And I think even, you know, you look at that one season that he had where he started and he won 15 games and he had an ERA of 4.22. I mean, that's not bad either.
Yeah.
So I think all told, Brett Cecil was a success for the Jays. And it's funny because I don't think there were that many points this season where there was a ton of confidence from your average Jays fan when Brett Cecil enters the game. And I would say that even extended to some extent to the manager. I think that John Gibbons at times this year didn't seem to have a ton of faith in Brett Cecil. And that was built on some really poor performances early on. And even later in the year, it took a while to restore that confidence.
I think for John Gibbons, I think pitch selection was a big issue with Brett Cecil. I think that he didn't, you know, he used to say sometimes, man, that guy loves his fastball, you know, and he just didn't like when Brett would go to his fastball in certain spots. He's saying, look, you've got this wicked curveball, snap it off over and over and over again. You know, the guys can't hit it. For fans, I think that for one reason or another, fans have just been so ready to turn on Brett Cecil at many, many points throughout. Like anytime he struggled, he heard it from the crowd and he got booed, you know, and it's just, he was just kind of like one of those guys. Like it's very like Aaron Loopian in a way where like people forget how good Aaron Loop was at one point for a couple years. Aaron Loop was, you know, he was a Brett Cecil comp, really an amazing left-handed reliever. You're not throwing him against righties like you would with Cecil, but he was really, really good. And fans are pretty ready to turn on him.
Definitely. So I guess now it's a question of looking around at the other free agents. And I don't know, there's not really a great option out there beyond Cecil. I mean, I'm assuming they're not even going to sniff around Aroldis Chapman. So then you're looking at guys like Mike Dunn and Jerry Blevins and trying to find JP Howell, maybe trying to find an answer in free agency potentially. Because I do think that you don't want to enter the season with complete question marks from the left side. And Aaron Loop, I mean, even though he did have success, as you were saying, that really disappeared on him in the last couple of years.
No, you can't trust him now.
Yeah, can't trust him now.
You can't trust him today. Not at all. You go back to that 2012, 2013, 2014 from Aaron Loop. He was solid. He was really good. And it has just evaporated. He's a non-tender candidate,
yeah.
I think. So if say Loop got non-tendered, your left-handed relief right now for the Toronto Blue Jays is Matt Dermody and Chad Girardeau.
Yeah.
And that's not good enough.
Right. And I would think that if they don't add someone between now and December 2nd, they probably hold on to Loop just as an insurance policy.
Yeah.
But I agree. There's no... You can't look at him and say, what's he projected at? 1.something million?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't say with absolute certainty that you're going to pick that up.
No, you can't. It'll be interesting. I think the Blue Jays are going to have to trade for relief, frankly.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're going to wade into this market. I think if anything, like the Cardinals going out and getting Cecil when they did kind of says something about the relief market in that they were like, look, we're not going to let all the teams miss out on Chapman and miss out on Kenley. Come in and kind of let, you know, drive this market wild. We're going to go and get this deal done with our guy now because we don't want to go after those big fish. I don't think the Blue Jays are going to want to sign a reliever for term.
Yeah, and I think that if they wait, then there will be some bargains that emerge. And at that point, you're not getting your first choice. But if you wait until January or even, you know, early February, there probably will be some guys out there and guys looking for jobs. It, you know, you always have to find that match and make sure that they're willing to come to Toronto if you're dealing in free agency. But I think that you can afford to wait at least on the right-handed guys because there's a lot more selection with the lefties. And I think that it makes sense for them to be keeping tabs on guys like Dunn and Blevins just so they don't get shut out. Because you can't hand your manager a bullpen with complete question marks from the left side. I just think that would be, you know, a disservice to what you're trying to do in 2017.
Absolutely. But the Blue Jays, with so many holes around the diamond and other places and so many balls in the air, as they try to fill a lot of these gaps, don't really have the luxury of going out right now, I don't think, and building like, you know, trying to build like one of these nuclear bullpens, right? And trying to like put together a real stopper of a group.
Yeah.
They just don't have that luxury right now.
Right. I mean, if you're, this is where, you know, the Cubs are the envy of baseball in so many ways. But if you're the Cubs and you have this amazing core of position players and you've got a few elite starters already in place, all right, this is the chance for you to tinker a little bit, and you can have the luxury of spending on the bullpen as kind of your main offseason move. Whereas for the Blue Jays, they just have so many pieces. I mean, there's so many holes still on this team. You know, we were talking to Ross Atkins last week on the conference call announcing the Kendrys Morales signing. And, you know, the questions were kind of coming at him in a lot of different directions because they need outfielders and they still need a first baseman and they probably need some starting pitching depth. They definitely need a backup catcher. And that's not even getting to the bullpen.
Couple holes.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's a lot of work to do.
Little bit of work to do there. Last thing on Brett Cecil, watch for his first year with the Cards to be like, he might put up like a 1.5 ERA because that league has not seen him at all. Like nobody there has seen him.
It's a good point because here, if you're in the AL East, you've got so many guys who are used to the fastball curveball combination. They might not be able to hit it, but there's some familiarity. Maybe they lay off it a little better. And that's definitely not going to be the case over in the National League.
Even guys in the AL East, even like Ortiz, Davis, like these guys still, like having seen him like 35 times, couldn't quite figure him out. So now you're going to have National League hitters who have never seen this guy before. And I think that I think Brett Cecil is going to be like super successful in his first year, like 14 K per nine successful. Like I think he's going to be really, really good.
I buy that. I think I could see that happening.
Where do we go with the Blue Jays? They haven't done anything in a week. They won't do anything.
Nope.
I wish they'd do something. I could talk about it. I can't talk about Kendrys Morales anymore. He's here. It's happening. You know, Lourdes Gurriel, see you in a couple of years, right? Like, so what, you know, where do we go from here?
I think that, so I haven't heard your thoughts on what Atkins was saying last week, but I got the sense that outfield might be where they're going right now, just because there are a couple potential openings there. And of course, any front office in today's day and age is going to juggle on multiple fronts. But I wonder if outfield is what they're looking at, just because you've got to surround Kevin Pillar with a couple pretty solid options.
I think that I've, you know, said that if you're going to make a splash, you're going to spend money on corner outfield. You know, and whether that's a Dexter Fowler, whether that's an Ian Desmond, whether, you know, whoever that is, that's where I think the Blue Jays need to be spending their money. You know, Ross Atkins didn't seem too phased that Josh Reddick came off the market. Didn't really seem like the Blue Jays were too involved there. I don't know what that means, if anything.
$52 million over four. Would you have recommended that kind of signing for the Jays?
I mean, if you believe that Josh Reddick can play every day, I think a lot of people see him as more of a platoon guy, really. And so, you know, if you think that there is something in his bat that, you know, is untapped, or if you think that is, you know, he'll hit better, you know, in the Rogers Center hitting environment, or, you know, in the AL East, whatever. But yeah, I don't, that's a lot of money for a guy that maybe you don't want to throw out there every day.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly makes Houston an interesting team, and along with the Brian McCann signing. I think that it works for them in a sense because they needed to balance out their lineup, which has a ton of right-handed hitters. But I think that for the Jays, I don't think that would have been a good deal. It's just a lot for Josh Reddick, who's, I mean, I get that in today's day and age, $52 million isn't a crazy amount of money, but Josh Reddick hasn't proven himself to be someone that you can put out there every day, like you were saying.
So say if you got like a Fowler or a Desmond on similar terms, would that make sense for the Blue Jays?
Yeah. I think both those guys are probably worth more. Yeah. I mean, I think that for...
In term or dollars?
At least in dollars. Yeah. Fowler, I think, might get a 5-year deal. Maybe Desmond's looking at 4, but maybe for closer to 60 than 50. And for Fowler, I think that I wouldn't be surprised if he's more like 75 or 80 over 5. And I think that's fine. Even, I mean, it gets a little more complicated because you're talking about giving up a pick. So for some teams, that's more palatable than others. But I think Fowler's a really good player.
The Blue Jays are in this interesting spot where they could totally afford to give up a pick because, like, assuming Edwin and Jose leave, they're going to have 3. But it almost seems like they don't want to.
Yeah.
It almost seems like they want to keep those 3 picks.
Right. And I get the argument for doing that if at all possible, but then that means you're looking at lesser free agents and or trades. So does that mean, I mean, let's say Nori Aoki gets non-tendered by Houston now that he's not really a fit there. Do you sign him and platoon him with Melvin Upton?
Right.
Maybe. That would be kind of the lower tier option that you'd be looking at as far as left-handed hitters who get on base a little bit. But he's certainly no one's idea of a great defender, and he doesn't give you any power, and he didn't hit lefties last year. So if you're going below the tier of the Desmond and the Fowler types and the Cespedes types for that matter, then you're going to be picking from players who are flawed. And at that point, it becomes that much harder to make a roster where the pieces fit together.
We're all flawed, aren't we?
Well, that's for sure.
But does that also mean that you could trade kind of a name brand prospect? If you've got three, if you know you're getting three first rounders this year and they're going to be three guys that you like, does that mean you could trade, you know, a kind of a highly regarded prospect that you think might be blocked once that prospect is ready to be in the major leagues, or that maybe you aren't as high on as the previous administration who drafted him, but he still has good industry value? Maybe that means you could trade like a prospect the fans would probably say, oh my God, like, we're going to lose that guy. But you've got three new draft picks from the first round coming in this year.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's possible.
And then you could get some good return on that trade.
And maybe it opens up the possibility of trading for someone like, for example, Adam Eaton, who's really intriguing. We got a couple questions about him for our mailbag segment, but he's the kind of player where it's worth giving up a top prospect for. And like you said, you can replenish it. And I think if you have two or three picks, because you get money along with those picks, you can actually do additional damage. So even if you only get two extra picks, you're getting so much money that it makes the rest of your picks better throughout the draft.
The pool money is a big consideration as well. Yeah. If the Blue Jays stay where they are right now with those three picks, like, they're going to have a huge pool. So they can really take a flyer on, you know, you look at the Blue Jays originally drafted Chris Bryant back in the day, and they weren't able to sign him because they just couldn't pay him what it would have took. But like, they could take a big flyer on a guy like that out of high school or whatever, sign him away, and really come away with a nice looking draft with a guy in the, you know, sixth or seventh round that nobody else picks because he has signability concerns, but you can make it happen.
Exactly. You can target maybe that injury guy who slips and had been considered a top option, or you can target that Boris client who has a commitment to UCLA or LSU or some top school, you know, prime away from out of high school potentially. There are lots of ways to make the most of that pool money. And I think that's, so when you look at it that way, you can actually understand why the Blue Jays don't want to give up those picks. The question is, can you actually get enough talent? Because they have a 2017 team, in my opinion, that still can be a good team. I mean, we saw last year's team was a flawed team. They were by no means some sort of dynasty, and they still made it to the ALCS. So if you can improve your team to the point where they actually have a shot at getting into the playoffs, who knows? I mean,
Just get in.
So I think they're close enough to the point that they have a real shot at getting in. That means that you don't want to shortchange yourself in the 2017 season.
Yeah, no. Cleveland got into the playoffs with like half rotation, if that. And you know, they went pretty far.
Yeah. They had a bullpen game, they had Josh Tomlin. I mean, this isn't the, you know,
they started Ryan Merritt in game 5 of the ALCS.
Yeah. Like, that's,
who the hell is Ryan Merritt?
Once you're in, anything can happen. And you have to have a lot of things go right to get there. But the Blue Jays have a lot of good players who can make things go right for them if they fill in around the gaps enough.
I think the Blue Jays will make some sort of a trade that'll surprise people this offseason. That's kind of where I think things are going. Or just with how they're going to try to, you know, backfill the losses of Encarnacion, Saunders, Bautista. But, you know, I don't know what that is. And I think that trade will probably surprise people. I think it'll probably involve players that we haven't been talking about.
What did you make of Atkins saying that the Blue Jays are very much have Saunders on their radar?
I think it was lip service,
yeah.
Frankly. I don't think it's something that they're realistically considering.
Same thing for Edwin?
I think they made the best offer they were going to make to Edwin, and he didn't take it. So I think that with Saunders, and even maybe a little bit with Bautista, like, look, if the Blue Jays miss out on whatever they're trying to get done in the outfield, and it's you know, late January, early February 2017, and guys like Bautista and Saunders are still available, and their prices come down, you can get them on, you know, a little 2-year deal at a reasonable rate, I think the Blue Jays would be very interested at that point. But right now, I don't think that Saunders is a, or Edwin or Jose are priorities.
Yeah. And I think that on the Encarnacion point, when you hear a GM say someone is slightly less likely to return. I mean, when you translate that from GM speak, I think yeah. it becomes he's unlikely to return, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So
well, the Blue Jays, they made their best offer. They yeah. said, look, this is it. This is it. Whether yeah. It's been reported that it was 4 years, 80. This is it. Take it or leave it. He left it.
And that doesn't mean that there's zero chance. There's probably some small chance still. But I think that as we've been discussing for a while, remains unlikely.
Would you have been okay with Edwin on a 4-year, $80 million contract?
Yep.
For the term as well? Like,
sure.
He's going to be 34 next year. So that would have been, right, I think, 34 next year? Maybe
yeah,
it's gonna be
so 4, 5, 6, and 7.
4, 5, yeah. So at 36 and 37, yeah, no, that would have been all right. $20 million a year. Even if his like power comes down and he can't play first base anymore,
yeah.
Even if he becomes Kendrys Morales,
right? Well, I mean that's where it gets a little complicated, but yeah, Encarnacion is a great hitter. I think 80/4 is fine for him.
80/4 would be fine for any of us. We'd certainly take 80/4. We're not going to get 80/4, but what we did get were your questions on Twitter, and we will answer them after this on @theLetters.
For a ball on the inner half and see if you can do some damage. Bring in a fly ball deep to left. Get up! Get up! This ball is gone! Welcome back, Smokey! Grounded left side. Diving stop by Donaldson, who bends him down. What a play by last year's MVP. This kept Toronto on top. Gunned that thing at 79 miles an hour. Strike three called. Perez retired. Stroman gets out of it.
That's been the strikeout weapon so far for Stroman, is that slider down and in to the left-handed hitter.
It continues on @theLetters. Arden Swelling, Ben Nixon-Smith. Please like, share, favorite, subscribe. Ben's on Twitter @BNixon-Smith. Our producer is Sam McKee. He's on Twitter @SamAMcKee. Don't you ever follow me on Twitter. We've got some questions from Twitter. We got many, many questions. An insane amount of questions, really. People are desperate.
We got a ton of questions. So, yeah. So, thanks to everyone who sent in a question. Definitely appreciate that. Thanks to Mike Bolsinger, Blue Jays pitcher, who also chimed in. And helped us settle a question about him. In fact, looks like Mike's looking ahead to a big year, which is great.
Yeah, it looks like Mike is looking to fill his time in this offseason.
Hey, the more people who want to chime in and listen to ATL and answer in our tweets, this is the better. That's great.
Sure. Yeah. Totally. Hey, standing offer to Mike Bolsinger if he ever wants to come in studio and shoot the breeze with us. So we got many questions. We kind of grouped them into a few big topics. Just, there's too many questions to get through. But Adam Martin, Big Blue Nest, Will S, Kevin, Adrian Chrysostom, Mikey McShow, and Cody Hutchison all asked in some variation about first base and about Justin Smoke and Edwin Encarnacion and how the Blue Jays kind of fill that gap if, you know, Kendrys Morales is an option there. The most interesting one to me was over under 30.5 games for Kendrys Morales at first base. Where do you stand on that?
Is this going to be an official over-under for 2017?
No, because we don't know what else has happened, right?
So unofficially.
Unofficially.
I'll take the under.
I as well.
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to... I think Kendrys Morales is a DH at this point. I think that's what he is. So at first base, you have Justin Smoke, who wasn't even on the playoff roster in the ALCS. You know, like a guy who, you know, the organization soured on down the stretch last year. Fans certainly soured on. He signed to a 2-year deal. It's only like $4.5 million a year. So if you wanted to just punt that deal, you could trade to somebody. Justin Smoke's a great tank piece. Plenty of teams would love to have him.
A great tank piece.
That's what he is, man. You could start Justin Smoke every day if you're tanking, right? He's a brilliant tank piece. It's just like, you know, like R.A. Dickey's a great tank piece, you know? Like it's like that's kind of if you want you could build a team of like these veteran guys. You can run out there every day and it'll give you like an MLB caliber player. But you're not going to win.
I mean, in defense of Justin Smoke.
I'm not attacking Justin Smoke. I'm just saying, like, you know, that you can, what I'm trying to say is you can move his deal.
Yes.
Like, it's not like this anchor that a lot of people make it out to be. You can move that. Like, you can do a lot of things with it. But I think Justin Smoke's going to play for the Toronto Blue Jays next year. I think the question is, how much will Justin Smoke play for the Toronto Blue Jays next year and against who? You know, he's traditionally hit righties better than lefties, and that's kind of been, you know, that's kind of been how John Gibbons has used him, just against righties. So do you add a platoon partner to hit lefties for him? Do you add a full-time first baseman? And Justin Smoke is kind of a bench bat. What do you do?
Yeah, I think they have a lot of options open. And, you know, Smoke at his best will give you some good at-bats when he's batting left-handed. He'll field the position solidly. There you go. What we saw after he signed that extension was very far from Smoke at his best. And, you know, to answer Adam's question about whether they regret the Smoke extension, I don't think that's the way the Blue Jays front office looks at things. Like, I don't think that they are going to second guess the process that led them to that decision. If you're going on results, of course. I mean, I think the fact that he was left off the roster, as you said, in the playoffs, tells you where he stands on their depth chart. And it tells you that they weren't happy with a player who went 1-4 September. So I think that he definitely has the potential to deliver more than what he did in the second half. We've seen that before. To answer Big Blue Ness' question, I don't think he has a lot of trade value. And so this is where you keep looking, if you're the Blue Jays, for either a platoon partner out there or someone who can even play the position every day. And that ties into their ongoing, you know, interest, some amount of interest in Encarnacion.
If the Blue Jays tie Justin Smoke with like a Steve Pierce or a Sean Rodriguez or whoever, and platooned at first base that way, is that okay? Or should the Blue Jays be looking for an everyday first baseman and have Justin Smoke on the bench?
I think both. It would be okay, but I think if you're the Blue Jays, you want to try to do better than okay.
Right.
So I think that you probably check on guys who can offer a little bit more offensively. And you keep your tabs on an Encarnacion. To address the notion of whether the Encarnacion possibility would be ruled out because of Smoke's contract,
no.
I mean, not at all.
Yeah.
And so that's where it's just a different category. I mean, a bench piece is never going to prevent you from doing your big business on your big guns.
The Smoke contract thing is so blown out of proportion.
Yeah.
It's $4 million a year. Like, it's chump change. I'm sorry. I know it sounds like a lot. I know that's like half of what Brent Burns just got on like one of the biggest contracts in NHL history, but it's not a big amount of money. It's not like an anchor contract. You can punt this contract. The Blue Jays could, like, you know what I mean? They could release him and just eat the rest of it. Like, it's like, that's not out of the option. You know what I mean? Like, that's a thing they can do.
Yeah.
They could send him to the minors. They could put him on waivers and say, like, hey, anybody who wants him, you can take him off waivers. If he clears waivers and he goes down to the minors, then he plays down there until he's hitting better.
Teams do this kind of thing all the time.
Yeah. It's not, the Smoke contract isn't preventing the Blue Jays from doing anything.
Nope.
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Mark Reynolds as a fit at first base for the Toronto Blue Jays?
Intriguing. Right-handed power.
I think he would hit a ton of bombs at Rogers Center. He's always been a good power hitter, but I think that, you know, playing at Rogers Center, that power production would go up even further. He's got some AL East experience from playing for Baltimore. He's going to strike out a lot, and fans aren't going to love that. But last year, Mark Reynolds showed an ability to make better contact than he has. He hit .282 last year in 441 plate appearances.
At Coors Field,
sure. And Rogers Center, a good hitter's environment as well.
Right. Yeah, Coors Field, it's like paradise for a hitter. Paradise, sure. For Mark Reynolds.
But do you think Coors Field is responsible for him going from a .234 career average to a .282 average? Like, do you think it was worth 50 points? That's a lot, man. Yeah. Not every player goes to Coors Field, goes up 50 points.
You know who won the batting title this year? DJ LeMahieu. You think DJ LeMahieu is winning a lot of batting titles if he's playing in Camden Yards or Rogers Center? Yeah, I don't know. I think
it's not the worst fit in the world. You don't want to spend a lot of money, right? And like, you want to spend your money on corner outfield, and if you're looking for somebody that you could either platoon with Smoke or that could possibly play every day, I don't think Mark Reynolds is the worst fit in the world.
I think if you can get him, let's say you get him on a minor league deal, that would be the best. Minor league deal.
I don't think that's going to happen.
You never know.
For a guy who's got 250 bombs in the majors, he's 32.
Right.
For a guy who last year hit well.
How many homers did he have last year?
Last year he had 14.
Yeah.
In 441 plate appearances.
You're probably
like full season 20.
Yeah. Minor league deal is unlikely. If you were willing to sign one, I'd say bring him aboard.
Well, yeah.
But he's probably not.
Minor league deal, though, right?
Yeah.
Like a minor league deal, like Alex Anthopoulos used to say, like, it's a free player. Like, yeah. Minor league deal, sure. Why not? It's a free look, right? But, you know, I like, would it be, look, Mark Reynolds last year made 2.6, 2 years before that made 2 each year. If you got him for $6 million, $7 million a year, I don't think that's that crazy.
Yeah, I wouldn't guarantee him that money. I'd give him a minor league deal where if he's in the big leagues, he can make $5 million bucks. If he's in the big leagues.
Do you have any creative solutions for the Blue Jays at first base?
I think the Pierce one is not creative. I mean, in the sense that it's very much out there. The notion has been floated, and the Blue Jays have reportedly expressed interest in Pierce and Sean Rodriguez, that kind of guy. I think that makes some sense. And I don't think those guys would cost you a ton. I think that they'd probably be, you know, 2 year deal, modest money, and you can probably get something done there. So I think that's the avenue that I would personally look at. Although, hey, I mean, anytime you're talking about those sluggers with that light tower power and talking about them in Rogers Center, it's intriguing to me. I'd probably look for a bit more of a balanced offensive player with a bit of versatility.
Light tower power. I like it. I think the Blue Jays, they like Pierce and Rodriguez just because they have versatility positionally. You can move them around the diamond. And so, because the Blue Jays, basically, they're not going to have like their DH spot is this kind of like rotating like sick bay anymore. Like, because Kendrys Morales is probably going to play there every day. So you kind of have to somehow, you know, find flexibility somewhere else. And those guys can bring you that.
Like, yeah.
They can give that's a crazy thing to say. I didn't mean to say it. They can give like Josh Donaldson a day off, or, yep, you know, a corner outfielder a day off.
Devin Travis even,
right? Yeah, exactly. We also had many, many questions about Josh Donaldson, thanks to Derek and Sean amongst others. Re-signing Josh Donaldson. This will be the next thing. You know, after now, once Jose and Edwin sign somewhere else, like, this will be the next thing. Is like, what of Josh Donaldson? What does a Josh Donaldson extension look like? He doesn't have a deal after this year. The Blue Jays still control him through arbitration, but he's not guaranteed anything. He's going into his age 31 season this year. He'd become a free agent at 33. It's an interesting spot, because how often do you have an MVP caliber player hitting free agency at 33?
Right.
Not too often.
Yeah. And a lot of the time, those guys don't hit free agency at all, yeah, because they are locked up to the kind of massive deal that I think it would take to sign Josh Donaldson. I mean, if you kind of start with this year and the next two seasons, okay, so that's when he's under team control. He's making 17 next year.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
Yep.
Then you look at the next year after that. Arbitration-wise, he has a chance to set a record, and yeah, he could be making, let's say, $24 million, and that's, I mean, that isn't even crazy.
Has someone like that ever hit arbitration? I mean, it's hard to think.
Like, guys have hit arbitration like in after MVP seasons and after having a lot of success in the big leagues, but that was before salaries had gotten to this point.
Yeah.
And Donaldson has an MVP on his resume. He's got a bunch of other top 10 MVP finishes. So he has a chance for a historic contract.
It'd be like a precedent-setting arbitration case.
100%. So he could be looking at, let's call it $40 million for those two arbitration years.
Sure.
That's before you even talk about his free agent years.
Yeah. Wait, two arbitration years. You mean like next year?
Yeah, next year, so, and 17, 2018.
And then you're going to give him 23 in the year after that?
Conservatively.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's pretty conservative. So let's say that you're, assuming he's healthy, which we have no reason to think that a very durable player like him wouldn't continue to take the field. So let's say you're budgeting around 40 for those 2 years. And then for each free agent year, it's got to be 30, right? At least. So I don't think that an elite player, and this is speaking in general terms, but I don't think that elite players are going to turn up the chance at free agency for 1 or 2 years tacked on. I think you're talking a lot.
You got to go long.
So yeah. I think
you got to sign him through like 37, 38.
Yeah. So let's say it's 5 years of his free agency that they're buying out at $30 million a pop. Well, that's 150. And then we already got to 41 for the ARB years.
So you're saying 7 years, 190?
At least. Yeah. I mean, you might have to throw in a signing bonus. You might have an option and a buyout. I think, you know, you're probably talking in the ballpark of $200 million to have a real conversation.
Right. So you look at some other kind of like really big name players who have, so you like Robinson Cano going into his age 31 season. So it's important to remember Josh Donaldson will be going into his age 33. But when Cano went into his age 31, the Mariners gave him 10 years, 240.
Yeah.
Pujols got the same deal going into age 32 from the Angels. And like, we've all seen how that's worked out. Miguel Cabrera going into age 31, again, going at age 31, got 8 years, $248 million. This is kind of the realm Josh Donaldson is in. MVP caliber players, top guys. You know, it's going to be hot. Like, I think 7 years, 190 is even maybe low.
Sure.
Like, I think it's going to have to be well over $200 million. I think you might have to go to 8 years. If Donaldson thinks he can hit free agency at 33 and maybe get eight, is that out of the question? Do you think he could hit free agency at 33 and get 8 years?
Depends on the kind of platform year he has.
Yeah.
You know, he'd have to have a huge year.
If he keeps doing what he's been doing?
Yeah. I mean, if he keeps doing what he's doing, then there's no limit that you can place on what kind of contract he might get. And I know he'd be hitting free agency at a time where there would be guys like Manny Machado and Bryce Harper in free agency,
right,
which complicates things for him and his representatives. But the bottom line is, I don't think that, you know, you're not going to sneak in a, you know, 4 year, $80 million extension for Josh Donaldson. It's kind of the point I'm making. I think you're much closer. You're in that 200 range, in my opinion, to have a serious discussion.
Oh, I think you have to be over $200 million.
Yeah,
all in. Whether and however you want to do that, you want to do signing bonus. Do you want? I don't know. Do you want to defer money? Whatever you want to do, but you've got to be, like, you've got to be coming correct to Josh Donaldson discussions.
Right. And you know too, like, you can't risk insulting players by lowballing them in these situations either. So it can be a very fine line, because, you know, you see how if you come at them with the wrong number, then it can be an indication from the player's side that you're not going to have the kind of discussion that they would expect.
Yeah. No, you're not valuing what I've done for you over the last X amount of years. Are you kidding me? I won an MVP in your uniform and I was your best player year after year, and you're going to insult me after everything I've given you?
Exactly.
Yeah, don't do that. Final one. We had a bunch of questions about Marcus Stroman. Thanks to Puck Don't Lie, Derek, Rick Prashaw, Jeff Paddock, Smokin Hokin. Just asking about maybe the framework of a Stroman for Eaton trade, or just why there's so much talk about trading Marcus Stroman right now. It's interesting to me. I think Marcus Stroman's value, if anything, right now is kind of low. He's coming off of a poor year by what he's capable of. But the other side of that argument is maybe this is what Marcus Stroman is, and maybe he's not going to get better from here.
Which, he was good last year.
He was good. The ERA wasn't great, but he threw a lot of innings.
Yeah.
And he had those struggles in the middle of the season.
Yeah, for sure. He wasn't great. There's no question there. Yeah. But he was a valuable pitcher. That's the kind of pitcher that teams spend a lot of money on in free agency. I think that if Marcus Stroman was a free agent right now, he'd be the top free agent pitcher, right?
Yeah. No, I'd say so.
I mean, it's better.
Well,
than,
where do you compare him to, like, Chapman and Jansen? Right?
Well,
like,
starting
yeah,
pitcher,
yeah, top starter, I'd say. Oh yeah, because the top starter right now is like Jeremy Hellickson, or he took the offer, so I don't even know who.
Rich Hill.
Rich Hill.
I'm a big Rich Hill fan.
I love Rich Hill. Yeah.
Yeah. He'd be the top guy.
Stroman or Rich Hill?
Stroman.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm trying to think off the top of my head who else is out there. Yeah.
Ivan Nova.
Yeah. Yeah. But Stroman, if you hit free agency right now, I mean, what is he? He's like 24, 25.
Yeah.
Like, that's like, yeah, it's ridiculous.
Right. But it goes to
that
show.
That doesn't happen.
He'd
have
value.
To be in the majors at like 17.
Right. So he has real value. And right. I think that it is speculation to answer Puck Don't Lie's question. There's nothing that I've read or heard that suggests that the Blue Jays are actively talking trade about Marcus Stroman in any way, shape, or form. But I would say that the speculation does extend within the industry, where people have kind of wondered, hey, you know, do you think the Jays would trade Marcus Stroman, or what do you think's going on there? And so, yes, it's speculation, but it's the kind of speculation that occurs when a team has so many needs like the Blue Jays do, and a player like Stroman, who would have value in trade talks.
That's who teams are going to ask about: Stroman, Sanchez, Osuna. Like, those are the guys, because they've proven they can do it at the major league level. So that's who teams are going to want. Does a Stroman for Eaton framework make sense to you?
For the Blue Jays, it does.
Does it make sense objectively?
I mean, I think Eaton has more trade value than Stroman just because Eaton's contract is so favorable.
Very team friendly.
And he's actually, because of the way his contract is set up, Eaton is under control for longer than Stroman. So he's further away from free agency, even though he's older. So
Stroman's got 3 ERB years and that's it.
Stroman actually has 4 RBIs.
Super 2?
Yeah. So, because he's Super 2. So Eaton's 5 years away. So, I mean, I think that Eaton has tons of trade value when you look at his value on the field, which he's established. He's a really good player, all-star caliber player. And then you look at his contract, which is really favorable. I think Eaton's worth giving up a lot for.
We shall see. We shall see. As you said, you know what? It's November 23rd. It's all speculation. It's all rumors. None of this is real.
Nope.
Nothing might happen, you know?
Yeah.
Like whatever the Blue Jays are going to do, it's probably going to surprise people, I think. It'll probably be something that we're like, oh, I didn't see that one coming.
Do you like the speculation? I get the sense that you don't like it.
Do you get that sense, Ben? I don't know where you get that sense from. We got to get out of here. But thank you for coming along with us. We appreciate you listening. For producer Sam, for Ben, I'm Arden. Thanks a lot. Talk to you next time on At the Letters.